You're listening to WCOM FM LP 103.5, Chapel Hill in Carrboro, and this is Focus on Business. I'm your host, Lee Strickland, and on today's program, I want to talk about one of the most important, if not the most important, asset in your business. It's your biggest investment, it can be your biggest expense, and it can be your biggest risk. That's your people. The human resource aspect of your business, the people, make or break your business. And so how you lead them, how you manage them, is as much art as it is science. It's as much about people as it is about passion, as about respect, as it is about being treated the way you want to be treated. I want to share with you a couple things that have come in to my email box and across the telephone in the past few weeks. A lot of businesses made change, and the front of that proposed or mandated change in overtime that was supposed to take effect December 1st of 2016. And in making those changes, they looked at it purely as a numbers thing. They didn't look at the people aspect in a lot of instances. And I'm going to say that is true, especially in the retail sector of our business world. Having worked in retail for a number of years in college and after college running retail stores, I realized quickly that the model that most retailers operate under looks at the majority of their employees as being the same, interchangeable, without any noticeable characteristics that distinguish them. They're plug and play. Let's say I have two employees, Judy and Jane. As far as the retail business model looks at that, Judy and Jane are the same. But if I look at Judy and Jane, I see some differences. Judy's an 18-year-old to 20-year-old in school and is working part-time because she needs the money to go to school. Jane, on the other hand, is working to help support her family. Now, Judy wants to work evenings and weekends because during the day she's taking classes and has study groups and things that she has to do. Now, Jane, on the other hand, wants to work during the day. She doesn't want weekends and she certainly doesn't want evenings when she needs to be home with her kids. Ideally, she wants to work from 10 to 3 and she wants the same schedule every week. Judy wants the same schedule too. But because she's willing to work evenings and weekends, that's a prime time and a hard time for me as a retail manager to schedule people. Now, if I'm looking at Judy and Jane as the same, I'm just going to let the computer generate a schedule. But Judy and Jane, whenever I want them or the computer wants them. Now, if I look down and I put parameters in and I say, well, I know Judy wants to work nights and Jane wants to work days. Judy wants to work weekends. I want to accommodate that. Then I'm going to go in and set parameters and make the schedule accommodate and recognize that Judy and Jane are not interchangeable. They have preferences. They have lives outside the business. After the implementation of the Affordable Health Care Act, which may be changing, but it impacted our businesses a lot of people went to part-time. And they had to have multiple part-time jobs to support their families. And so when their schedules were not steady, were not the same schedule every week, it caused them issues in juggling all of these part-time jobs. And so what I've been hearing from people who were impacted in December from that proposed overtime change is that the businesses made the change, and a lot of times they took their people from management positions that were working 50 and 60 hours a week, and they put them back into non-management positions, made them hourly and eligible for overtime, and that was fine. The one thing they didn't do was they didn't stop treating those people that they moved from management back to being a regular employee, non-management, non-exempt from overtime, to treat them not as management any longer. And so what I've been hearing from a number of people is that their employer changed them from being a manager to being a regular employee, but they're holding them to the standards of if they were running their departments, if they were running their operations, just like they had been as a manager. And that doesn't work. It doesn't work from the employee's standpoint, and it won't work from the business's standpoint because it's not right. So you can't hold an employee who is not a manager to management standards. You can't ask them to run a department and say you're managing this department, but you're not a manager. It just doesn't work that way. And so that's bad for morale. And bad morale leads to poor performance on the retail floor. And when people are performing badly on the retail floor, it's translating to the relationships with your customers. And that is why so many businesses struggle right now. And I'm not just talking retail businesses. I've been hearing of some of the tech companies, major international tech companies that have done layoffs. And they've done it because their business is shrinking. And when they look at it, it's like, well, it's competition. Well, why aren't you competing? Is it your technology or is it your team? And is it really your team members or is it how you're leading and managing that team? And that's something we really need to look at and we really need to think about. Because when we are looking at our people as drones, as robots, as not having any impact on how we do business and being interchangeable like Jane and Judy, and not taking into consideration and respecting them as individuals, as people who are working to provide for themselves and or their families, then we start disconnecting from our organization. And our organization, our team starts disconnecting from the mission, from the goals, and from having a positive attitude about our business. And believe me, whether you treat one employee badly or every employee badly, it impacts morale. And whether they're talking about it or not, it impacts their attitude. And 9 times out of 10, when things change, it ruffles feathers, it flows through the organization. It's a domino effect, and it impacts your business in visible ways, in intangible ways, and in very tangible ways in how they interact with your customers and how motivated they are to go that little bit further, to do that little bit more to help your business. Things that you don't even think about no longer will take place, and it will impact how your customer views your business. Retailing is a great example because in retailing, it is about the people. 9 times out of 10, the products that are in a retail store are products that can be purchased, either this exact same product or something very similar that can substitute for that product in hundreds of stores in your area. Whether that's a book, whether that's a shirt, a pair of pants, a pair of shoes, earrings, grocery items, whatever you're looking for to sell to your customer, the difference is usually in customer service and the relationship and the loyalty to your brand that comes about as part of how you serve the customer. Many retail stores are struggling to compete against online retailers. And I want to talk about that right now because it is in part about how the brick and mortar stores are staffed or not staffed and how the attitudes of their employees translate. So if I can go online and order an item and have it delivered to my house, and I do this all the time because I'm frankly a person that does not like shopping and does not like shopping malls, and it's just me. And so I like to go online and I'm going to order. So what do I expect when I go online and I order? If I want to chat with someone, fine. But 9 times out of 10, I've done my research. I know the product and I'm concerned about the convenience of how fast it will get to me and the price. And frequently I will be willing to pay a little bit more to not have to go to the retail store. And I may want something that local retail stores don't even carry. And so I get more variety. I get more convenience. And I can shop at 2 o'clock in the afternoon or 2 o'clock in the morning and be able to get what I want and get it delivered to the house or to the office. And so what I'm willing to trade for is convenience and a little bit of cost. Sometimes things are even cheaper online than they are locally. And so I'm willing to go out, look for that. And I'm not looking for any interaction. I'm not looking for any care. I don't have to have anyone taking care of me and having a conversation with me. Now, if something goes wrong with the shipping or those kind of things, yes, that aftercare service is important to me. The ability to exchange and not have to deal with a hassle of doing that, again, is convenient for me. I can slap on a sticker that I've printed out. I've got authorization. The mailman picks it up and it goes. So what am I exchanging? what is the trade-off for me in doing things online versus doing things in the traditional brick and mortar store? Well, if I'm going to take my time to go to a brick and mortar store, I want everything to be nice and clean. I want it to be organized. I want it to be easily found. And if I need help finding an item, I want to be able to find someone that can actually answer my questions, interact with me, and help me make the purchase. And I want it quick. I want it convenient. I want a value to the exchange. Again, I might be willing to pay a little bit more at the local store to shop local and for that one-on-one face-to-face interaction. But if I get to the store and the store is disorganized, the store is dirty, I can't find an employee doesn't have knowledge about the product, the employee doesn't seem to care about me as a customer, they're just putting in their time, they have a bad attitude, or they're not well-dressed, they're not clean, they're not courteous, there's a whole lot of things that go into this. My experience is going to reflect whether I'm going to buy that product there right then, even if I need it, chances are I'm going to pull out my iPad, my smartphone, I'm going to go online and look to see if I can find it somewhere else, even though I'm standing in that store. Because I don't like the attitude of the employee. I don't like the inconvenience. I don't like something about my experience that reflects on the brand, and I'm not going to come back to that retailer again. And so we've been seeing that kind of translation of quality, value, convenience, the exchange of cost, the courtesy, whether someone's there to service, whether the variety and the options of what we want to buy is available in a brick and mortar local store. All of those kind of things are coming into play. But one of the biggest things that will help me as a customer make a purchase when I walk into a brick and mortar store or I call someone online to place an order is that interaction with that employee of that business. And a positive employee with a good attitude, with knowledge in the store, that has just that aura of service and that they care about me as a customer will go a long way to getting and keeping my business. And so we have a disconnect in a major part of our businesses now here in the United States. I'm going to say in other countries too, but I want to talk about here in the States in particular, because we have high expectations of how we work hard for our money and we want our money to count. We want respect. Car dealers, retailers, you know, service companies, doctor's offices. Don't even get me started on going into a doctor's office, having the first appointment, and it's still taking 3 hours to get in to see the doctor. It doesn't make sense when our business models are broken, when our business models are so dependent on our people and how they work our processes and our systems and how they treat our customers. It's make or break for our businesses on a daily basis when we're thinking about competing. If we can't compete, 9 times out of 10, it is somehow impacted by our ability to manage and lead, hire, retain, train, and get our workforce, our most valuable resource in our business, properly led, managed, and effective. We don't want Judy and Jane to be interchangeable. We want Judy to be Judy and Jane to be Jane, and we want to put them in the right positions at the right time, doing the right things. Back when I was in grad school, I worked for a retailer that's now a national retailer. At the time, it was regional. They were growing rapidly. I went in to have, like any other grad student possibly, needed a little bit of extra money to make, you know, pay for the bills, stay out of debt. And so I thought retailing was easy, get a schedule, kind of mindless from the standpoint of I wasn't going to be doing statistics, I wasn't going to be working with computers other than maybe cash registers, doing some accounting and things like that. So at the time I had a degree in finance and accounting. I had been running retail stores, applied for the jobs, told them my schedule, and again, I was kind of like the Judy in the story in that I wanted to work evenings and weekends. I could work 20 hours as long as in evenings or weekends. I could probably work more evenings and weekends. Invariably, when I would get my schedule, I would be scheduled for during my class time, and it wasn't going to work. And not only was I scheduled for during my class time, I was scheduled to stock shelves to fold clothes. Now, I'm trained in running cash registers, I'm trained in finance, I'm trained in accounting, I'm a manager, and yet those items were overlooked by the recruiters. Why? Again, because they were looking for plug-and-play people. They got a list of people that passed the screening, a new person running the store, all they looked at was names, and they started throwing bodies and time slots. And I would get on schedules and try and have to switch with other employees and find them. And invariably, I would be switching with someone that had said, I want to work only days. I can't work nights. And I would be switching, and we'd be spending so much time switching our schedules around. But it was purely because the retail model said everyone's interchangeable, and it's about the business and what the business wants when it wants it, not about valuing our employees, valuing our human resources in the aspect, and working to say it's what the business needs and it's what the employee needs. And they didn't look at skill sets. They didn't look at experience. They didn't put the right people in the right positions at the right time. And that was a problem for them because they had a huge retail turnover. And most retailers seem to have, and I know one local hotel that I was talking about, the manager talked about, he had about a 47% turnover rate for employees in his organization. And he goes, well, it's kind of understandable. I only hire college students, and they're going to be here for a while. And they're usually, you know, in their junior or senior year, and I know I'm going to have them for a little while. And they're not that reliable when they are on the roll, et cetera, et cetera. And I said, why are you only hiring college students? Well, it's cheaper to do that. Well, is it cheaper when essentially 50% of your employees are turning over every 2 months? No, because there's a training cycle there. There's a loss of time. There's a loss of quality of service to your customers. And we have to think about that. We can't just think of the labor dollars we're expending. We have to think about our business models, and we have to think about our customers. The golden rule should be, and is, do unto others as you would have done unto you. Don't jerk your employees around. Don't jerk your customers around. Don't create bad experiences for your employees, and you won't create bad experiences for your customers. It's critical for every business, large and small, to pay attention to the human resource element of the business. It will make or break your business. It can be the best investment. It can be the biggest expense. It can be your biggest asset, or it can be your biggest risk. So many businesses get sued by employees that were improperly treated, improperly trained, improperly terminated, who were not given guidance, who were subjected to poor working conditions, to harassment, to other things that go in the organization that managers and business owners become blind, deaf, and dumb to. They ignore it, not looking for those implications. And I remember my management class, and I'm going to date myself, this was like 1983, my first undergraduate class. My manager, my professor taught management, had been an international manager for some fairly large consumer products companies, had worked in 14 countries, and was talking about it. And he said, don't ever think there is a science to managing people. It is an art, and it is about respect for each person that you hire, for each person that you manage. It's about understanding them as individuals and what motivates them. Money doesn't motivate everybody. Respect motivates 90% of the people. Courtesy should not be optional. Clear, consistent leadership, not just lip service to the rules and the regulations and doing things because you have to. It's looking at things and looking at the impact, that change and potential change in overtime that was supposed to go into effect last December, as I mentioned, had tremendous ripple effects on business models because everyone started looking at the expense of labor and what would it translate to. And I built a model to analyze a retail operation in California because California has a lot of other things going on with minimum wage increases steadily, certain things, and going through the scenarios of, well, what's the least expensive version of this, of reducing time, adding people, managing the work schedules and doing those kind of things, and then what are the morale impacts of each of these? Because you can't do one without the other. Because if you only look at the expense of your labor force, if you only look at the convenience for you and just, you know, Judy and Jane are the same, no. Then you're going to have higher expenses and you are going to have an impact on your business model beyond the cost that you can quantify just with labor costs. you are going to have the cost of less flexibility. You're going to have a cost associated with lower levels of customer service from employees who are less motivated to go the extra mile because of something that you didn't address when you were just addressing the numbers. I've worked in lots of organizations where there were huge disparities between what people were paid based on where they went to school. Doing the same jobs, there might be $20,000 difference in their base pay. Why? Well, one went to Harvard and one went to NC State. And that difference in compensation, while not directly talked about, was known. And so that motivation, as people's salaries continued to be out of sync, even when the best performers came out of NC State, they could never make up the differential in starting pay from going from different schools. The thing is, and a lot of times when we recruit people in, and even though they come from different schools, we may hire somebody from NC State versus somebody from Harvard because it's a better fit, but we pay them less to start. And so those types of things get translated into how motivated your employees are, how motivated they are to perform, how motivated they are to stay in your business. And so that has to be super concerning for everyone owning and running a business. So let's talk about some of the layoff type things that are going on. I was at a firm, walked in, I didn't even know they were laying people off until the police were sitting outside in the parking lot that morning. And I'm thinking, what in the world has happened? I walked in, I still didn't know. And then somebody said, well, they started laying people off this morning. And I thought, okay, I'm even a member of management and they hadn't told me. And so I was trying to figure out what really was going on. Went to the morning meeting and half of our team, implementation team for software, had been laid off. And I'm thinking, what in the world would make someone that's implementing software, just like 30 days away from launching the software, lay off half the people that were trained on using the software? And it went back to, again, talking to management and how they made the decisions. They said, well, they aren't at their desk doing their work. Well, no, they're not at their desk doing their normal work because they're on a special project that launches in 30 days. And they are the people that were going to be responsible for training the rest of the people in the organization and doing the work during the implementation phase. And so suddenly we have a huge, expensive, you know, $20 million project at risk because they laid off these certain people. Well, they looked at who to lay off. They weren't at their desk. Well, okay, they weren't at their desk. And everybody's the same. No, everyone's not the same. And it created huge ripple effect issues that created morale issues because of the way the layoffs were done. And it created morale issues because now people were expected to pick up for the slack for the people who weren't there, and they didn't know when they were going to be next. And so for over a series of Fridays, people kept getting laid off. And so every Friday we would walk in and people wouldn't be working. And one Friday I asked everybody, I was like, why are you not working? And they said, well, why would I do anything this morning if I'm going to get laid off this afternoon? I was like, how do you know you're getting off? I don't, but I don't want to work this morning in case I am laid off this afternoon. And so people were doing less and less. They were less and less motivated to go an extra mile. And again, it had an impact on everything from purchasing to production to recruiting, because we were still hiring while we were laying people off. And it just didn't, there was this out of sync, out of order mentality. And what we were finding, as I observed this, was that while people were in their cubes and in their offices working, pretty much everyone that was at that facility had already quit. They were showing up to work. So they were physically there, but they were not emotionally, they were not professionally, and they were in no way motivated to get work done and to make things happen. And so that particular site was acquired, I want to say, in August of 1 year and was out of business by December the following year. And so when you're thinking about your people, it's not that they're plug and play. They're not identical. And the more you know about what motivates a person that works for you when you're recruiting them, about their background, and once they're in your organization, take time to remember who they are and that they had a life and still have a life outside of your business. And with that life, they may have skill sets that you forget they have. I was recruited to come to North Carolina by a British automaker or supplier, and I had come from Ford Motor Company. Not once in the years I worked for them did they ever ask me about how Ford actually worked or what Ford did. And it was really kind of ironic in the fact that I actually worked at the plant that they were competing against. So as an external supplier, they competed at a plant that I had been based at, knew in and out, and just knew everything about how things were working. And everything from cost to structures to future programs and all that stuff. And they weren't asking because, you know, they thought it would be industrial espionage, which it wasn't, because I didn't have documents and things. I just had my experience with the organization. But the fact that they were so unaware that they were trying to figure out how things worked and how they could compete and why they had 18 people doing what one person at Ford did, they never asked. And even when I would go to them and say, hey, I worked at that plant. I was the consultant for that plant. I did this for that plant. They just looked at me like, well, you can't possibly know. And I'm like, you're forgetting the role I have here as a troubleshooter versus the role I had there as being on the front lines with the cost, the financials, all the aspects of that organization. And so we forget the skill sets. We forget that somebody that may be working on a production line or on a retail floor may actually be doing accounting for a nonprofit. They may organize the soup kitchen or the inventory at a nonprofit. They may be an active leader in their church, and they may have skills that we're not aware of or we've forgotten about. So the less we respect, the less that we intentionally or unintentionally pay attention to the reality is that every person in our organization is a unique person. They have unique life experiences. They have unique education. They have unique things about them that can be brought to help our organization succeed. The more likely we are to permanently damage our businesses and fail to be able to compete. If someone comes into your retail store, your coffee shop, and the barista behind the counter has an attitude, do you think they come back? Is your product so different and so unique from everybody else's that's offering coffee that they're going to come back and take a bad attitude? If you're a retail store and the customer walks in and they don't know where something is and they can't find where somebody to ask, or they find the product they want and they can't find a place to check out, do you think they're coming back? Do you think they're even making that transaction? We have to be aware that there is always an alternative for our customers. And more there will be alternatives as the employment opportunities come back up in the next couple years for people to get out there and go from part-time jobs back to full-time jobs. As those things change, we're going to be competing again for those scarce resources, for those skilled workers, for those workers that are capable and are willing and able to come into our businesses and make a difference. So how are you going to compete? If you're competing strictly on money and benefits, you might get a few. But as things improve, they're going to find those somewhere else. If you're competing out of respect and integrity and the recognition that every person that comes into your organization can make a unique contribution, that whether it's the janitor or the CEO, everyone has a role to play. It's not the same role, and it may not be of equal value, but it's still necessary, and each role needs to be respected. Each person needs to be respected. Simple courtesies, simple understanding that all employees are not the same. Yeah, I was working with a program, and the government had some funds available, and I started looking at going after those funds for this program. And when I started looking at it, I realized how disconnected our government is even in how they create their programs and how they fund things to say, well, only women need customized programs, or only men need homeless shelters. Or there's this, it's either or. It's not looking at each person within a group or each group and understanding that a broad brush strokes don't say every woman needs this type of approach and every man needs this. That's not true in this day and age. Men, just like women, may need to take time off because they've had a kid or they've adopted a kid. They may have to take care of parents that are aging and need care. They may need flexible schedules because they have a loved one that's sick and or they have special things that are going on. We have to take that into consideration to make the workplace work. Now, that doesn't mean not holding people accountable, and it doesn't mean allowing people not to show up for work because of emergencies and things or take advantage of things, but it does mean taking into consideration when we're planning our workforce, when we're adapting our businesses, when we're out there competing, we have to realize how important it is to recruit, retain, train, manage, and lead valuable people. Back in manufacturing, we used to talk about headcount. And I never thought about how strange it was that we called it headcount until somebody said something to me about, do we care about the bodies too or just the heads? And we even have to think about our terminology in that point. To that point, we have to think about everyone as an individual and how they come in as part of the workforce. With that respect that you give your employees, respect should be returned to you. Communication, listening. I once had a boss that said he had an open door policy. He literally would keep his door open. But if you wanted to go in to talk to him about any kind of issue, his mental doors were closed. And so we have to realize that communication, connection, personal accountability, personal respect, that golden rule of doing unto others as we would have done unto us, is critical to our business success. If we want to compete, our ability to compete, no matter what our products or services are, no matter how great our technology is, it cannot stand alone and deliver itself to the customer. We have to have our teams behind us. And so if you're in retail, if you're a technology company, whether you're a local company on Main Street or you're a publicly traded company on Wall Street, you have to think about the human element, and you have to take that into consideration in how you're configuring and running your business. The other aspect of valuing our employees is not expecting them to not be able to say, I don't know, or I need help. Too many businesses have an atmosphere where their employees think they have to be all-knowing and perfect. If they need help or if they have an issue or something's going wrong, they tell about it at the last minute when it's too late to do anything about it and becomes even more costly to the business. When we have open communication, when we have a supportive environment for our team that says, hey, I don't know how to do this. Can you help me? Or we're running behind. Can we get some extra people on this? Or this has gone wrong. It didn't work as we expected. Can somebody help me troubleshoot this or come up with another alternative or solution? We need to look at a team environment where people are not omniscient, where they don't know everything, where they're not perfect, and enable communication that's us to say, I need help. This isn't my area of expertise. We also need to create environments and promotional paths or recognition that are not moving our technology people always into management positions. I've seen too many organizations take their best technology people and promote them into management positions. One, they didn't have the skill or the desire to be a manager. They took the position because it was more money. And the business paid for that in twofold. One, because they no longer had their best technology people working on the technology. And two, the person was so unhappy and so ineffective as a manager, it impacted the business, and the person either leaves or they get fired because they're ineffective as a manager. Where when we have multiple career tracks of people who are technologists who do want to go into management, or are technologists and want to stay technologists and doing the product part, then give them the opportunity to make more money and to advance within those silos. Let them be able to advance as a high-level technology person and respect that, and let them stay in that role if they want to stay in that role, and communicate that it's okay to not want to move up and become a manager. We have to value people and not think, again, that every career path is the same for every person in the organization. We want to challenge, we want to reward, we want to advance people and value them for who they are, for what they want to do, and for where they can make the biggest accomplishments. And again, that's not happening in a lot of businesses. I'm hearing the stories from people in major technology companies, from major retailers with hundreds of stores. We're seeing the stories of companies expanding, adding more and more facilities, and not looking at the environment and saying, when are too many stores? When are we oversaturating? When are we cannibalizing our stores because we've added a second location close by? And we see that, and we've seen it in different companies falling into that trap of bigger is better and growing faster and faster, even when they're incurring debt. And then the more debt they incur to expand faster, the more critical it is that each of those new expansions hit the numbers, and they're not going to hit the numbers because the factors don't stay the same. And so it's understanding the customer, it's understanding the employee, it's understanding your team, it's understanding the environment, it's understanding regulations, it's understanding how all these elements come together. And again, it's being willing to have you, your management team, everyone involved in the organization able to say, I don't understand why we're doing this. I need help. This isn't working. Can we figure out why this isn't working? And not shooting the private. And one of the guys I used to work with had been a colonel in the Army. And he said, well, in the Army, everything rolled downhill. And it was never the colonel's fault. He said it was the private's fault. And he was just kind of joking about that, because every military person I've ever met, the leadership takes the responsibility. But in some instances, I understood what he meant, in that in a corporation, it's always someone to blame. And 9 times out of 10, it's not the manager that made the decision, that made the change, that's impacting the business model. And so there are a lot of factors that come into the art of management. There are some science things. There are things about motivation. There's things where monetary incentives work. But once we get to a certain level, and we've taken care of our security needs, when we're able to pay our bills, we have some money in the bank, everyone's happy and healthy, if not wealthy, then we start having freedom and looking around and saying, I'm miserable in this job. I don't like the culture in this business. And as the business environment, as the economy speeds up and everything gets better, people start having more alternatives. And I always had a rule when I was working. If there wasn't a path around the issue, if someone asked me to do something illegal, unethical, or immoral, then I wasn't staying in that business. And it didn't matter to me what the financial impact was, because those were things that weren't compromisable. So when I got recruited into one business, they went through extensive testing, flying you to a psychologist, doing all this testing. And even at the end of the testing, they were told that my ethical standards were this high and it may be an issue. So in other words, my ethical standards were so high, everything was black and white, that I would not necessarily mesh with this organization that was recruiting me. And they ignored that. And I lasted at that company about 8 weeks, because it took them 8 weeks before they asked me to falsify the financial statements, and I said no. And the issue with that is they knew me. They'd done the test, they had the information, they had the feedback, they had all the references and what everyone had said about who I was and what I was. But yet they hired me. I made the mistake of accepting the job. And I got there and they were shocked that I wasn't plug and play. that I was the very person that I was in the interview. I was the very person that all the references had said I was. That was the very person that all their testing showed I was. And I wasn't a fit for their organization. And that organization was another organization that had no respect for the employee. And part of it was immaturity of some of their leadership. And part of it was just the personal styles of the managers at that organization. The culture, the ethics, what were they being measured on? And that's all they cared about. They cared about the dollars they were going to bring into their personal checkbook, to their personal savings accounts, what car, sports car they were going to be able to drive, and what everyone would think about their big sports car or their house. They weren't concerned about the long-term viability of that business or the long-term viability of their workforce. And they made bad decisions. And so when you look at an organization that will allow people to be injured in the workplace, will put people's lives at risk, that's very obviously something that you don't want to be involved in. And yet it happens again and again. Those organizations perpetuate themselves for a little while, and eventually something happens that they can no longer do that. And the damage is done, and the brand of the business is irreparably damaged. And if you say the names of those companies, we remember them for certain things. We remember them for the bad things, not for anything that good went before that. And so it comes down to the people we hire. It comes down to the values we transmit as leaders and owners of our businesses. It comes down to our willingness to actually recognize as different as everyone is in our organization, we can lead them and we can manage them if we know them. If we create a structure where everyone knows their role, they know the goal, they know where they fit in the organization, and we're communicating that to them quickly, accurately. We give them feedback. We allow them to ask questions. We allow them to interact. We take into consideration their differences, and we value them and we leverage them to make a great team, a strong team. When you're recruiting, I've seen this with lots of my clients that are hiring people. 9 times out of 10, they want to hire the person they liked in the interview, regardless of the skill set. I worked with a CRO company early on when I started my business, so I want to say it's been about 10 years ago. And we were evaluating their business and looking at their costs for some contracts and things. And what I discovered is of the employees they had about 20% of their current payroll that were non-productive because they didn't really have a role or an ability to contribute to the goals of the business. And when we would sit down and I interviewed every employee in the business to find out who they were, what they did, what projects they worked on, and it's pretty bad when an employee looks across at the table at you and says, yeah, I really don't do much during the day. I was supposed to be doing this when I was hired, but that didn't really work out. So I've been doing these kind of things. But sometimes I just spend the day playing games on the computer. And I said, really? And I said, how do you feel about it? Well, it's not real motivating, but I make a lot of money. I don't have overtime. And I can get satisfaction out of the nonprofit things I do after hours. And so when we're looking at that organization, to think that 20% of their payroll, of their people, were not doing anything, and they came in to take the paycheck, not to contribute to the process. And when I sat down with the founders and the leadership team and told them that, they said, yeah, but we like them. And so, you know, we don't want to cut that 20% of the payroll out, and we're making a profit anyway, so we're just going to keep them. That was kind of shocking. It's great to want to keep people there. It's great to be able to pay them well. But in the long term, your business can't maintain that level of dead weight on a payroll and unmotivated people on a payroll. Because eventually what happens is those 20% getting paid the same as people who are working hard, who are working long hours, who are contributing to projects, while somebody right next to them is playing games all day, impacts the morale of the organization. And that's what gradually started happening. And so they became less profitable. They had less projects. They had more management issues. They had more turnover of the people who were contributors, and that 20% of dead weight on the payroll were still there being dead weight. And they couldn't figure out why their best people, their biggest contributors, were leaving. And it was that difference in what was being allowed in the organization culturally, management-wise and leadership-wise. And so we have to think about the ripple effects and the impact on others. One of my first corporate management experiences was with the UAW. I had, I think, 14 UAW guys working for me, and they'd been working for the UAW and Ford and manufacturing longer than I had been on the earth at the time. And we had one guy that, as I took over, would start being late. And following the rules, I would dock him and do different things. And one day the guys came over to me and they said, "You got to realize that, yes, he's one of us, but when he doesn't show up, it has this ripple effect. And we want you to take the maximum rules, apply the rules to him in the maximum way that's possible, and talk with him because it's impacting the rest of us." And that was an interesting perspective because they were willing to step up and tell me as a manager, I needed to do something differently. Because while I was following the rules for how I was supposed to handle it, I wasn't addressing the morale and other issues. So the rules mattered, and then they mattered. Something else mattered more, the morale of the rest of the team. And so sitting down with that employee that was playing the roles and explaining to him, you know, your other team members are being really impacted by your disrespect for the rules. And while you're playing with the rules, and I can't fire you, I can't do all these things, you're going to find the impact by not being another part of this member of this team. You're going to be an outsider because you're not contributing. And that conversation was a hard conversation for me because I was a young manager. And while I had hired and fired people in other positions, this environment was one of the toughest environments I had ever been in. And I said, after that, I can manage anybody, I could lead any organization, and I could learn anything having gone through that experience. And so realizing that we have to take in consideration how our decision to deal with one person on our team impacts all the other team members. While there's financial aspects to everything, there's morale aspects to things. There are the rules, and then there's reality. There's compliance. There's things that seem to be visible and seem to make sense from this. But when we step back and we realize people are not plug and play, everybody's an individual. People should be respected, be given courtesy and communication, given the opportunity to ask for help and get help, given opportunities to change their behaviors and improve. But we also have to look to ourselves as managers, as business owners, as leaders, and see where our flaws are and how we may be contributing to the issues by the decisions we've made and the changes we've made in how our businesses operate. Ask yourself today, how is your business performing? If all systems are go and things are still not working, if you're not competing, if your costs are rising and your revenues are dropping, if you're just not having a business that's performing as you wanted it to perform and you need it to perform, look at the man or woman in the mirror first. Look at yourself as a manager and as a leader, as a business owner, and analyze the decisions you've been making. And then look at how you've been leading your organization and managing your people. You've been treating them as plug and play? Or have you been treating them as the best resource, as individuals, as part of the team that can contribute and have value and that you need to respect and get to know a little bit better? If you lead an organization of 10,000 people, you're not going to know every one of them, but you should know every one of your direct reports well enough to know that they know every one of their direct reports well enough to know how to motivate, to use them to the best of their ability for everyone to succeed. You should be able to lead your organization effectively. Your subordinates should be able to lead their organizations and their areas of responsibility effectively, align the goals, communicate well, and let everyone know the people they're working with directly to the best of their ability and enable people to say, "I need help. I've made a mistake. I don't know how to do this. I need training. This isn't working. I got this new position. It's not what I thought it would be. Or I'm a technologist. I don't want to be a manager. Let people be honest and open in their communication, and your business will be that much more successful. Accept the challenge of leading yourself first, managing your warts and your issues. Make sure that you know your strengths and your weaknesses. And don't be afraid as a leader, a manager, a business owner to say, I don't know. I don't have the skill set. Some of the best managers I have ever had, best leaders I have ever had, surrounded themselves with really smart people who had skill sets that they didn't have. And they worked with those people, and they promoted those people, and they gave accolades to those people that made them look really good. And so building an environment where you're the smartest person in the room will frequently hold you back. If you're not the smartest person in the room, but you're the savviest person in the room running your organization, and you can bring really strong leaders and managers and technologists and specialists into your organization to help it grow, you will have a night and day difference to your organization. Motivation, culture, attitude, goals, visions, values, communication, up and down the ladder. The more you value the people that are part of your organization, the more they're going to value you, the more they're going to like working in your organization, the more they're going to be willing to go that extra mile. You may not pay the most, you may not have the best benefits, but if you have the best environment, if you have a place people love to work, then you're going to have a lower turnover. You're going to have happier customers. They're going to be willing to do more for those customers. They're going to answer that phone, and they're going to be happy to serve the customer. They're going to be grateful for the job that they're in, and you're going to be grateful to have them working in your organization. Management is art and science. It's numbers, but more than that, it's people. And any decision we make on how we're going to operate our business, our processes, our systems, our policies, our procedures, our values have to be about the people. I hear so many people saying negative things about corporations. And large corporations are made up of people. They're owned by people. Our retirement accounts are in a lot of those large corporations' stock and bonds. And so when we're thinking about hating an organization, we need to think about it from the standpoint of that corporation is made up of people. If we don't like what it stands for, then that means the values, the mission, the communication, what the people inside are doing is not what we want to value. And that's fine. We may not share those values. But in general, to paint a broad brush strokes that every corporation is evil and every corporation is something other than the people that's comprised of is just wrong. And each business, whether it's a corporation or a mom and pop on Main Street or the corporation being traded on Wall Street, has to be looked at as a sum of the people who run it, who own it, who work in it, who buy from it, who it buys from. And those are the relationships. Every business is made up of people, and they succeed or they fail based on the capabilities of those people and how those people are led, how they're managed, and how they're valued. And I want to ask you, is your business competing well because of your people? Or are you struggling because of how you're leading your people? Or maybe you have the wrong people in your organization. Sit down, take some time, get to know your team. Ask the questions of your leadership team and your managers. What are the skills? What are the talents? What are the abilities of the people we have in our organization? And are we using them fully? Is there a pearl somewhere in the oyster of your business that you're overlooking because you don't know your people and you're thinking of them as plug-and-play parts? Every business succeeds or fails based on the people in it, including you. And so I want to be sure that you are valuing yourself, you're valuing your people, and you're leading yourself and your organization to ultimate success. So ask yourself, How is my business doing? And can it be doing better by having the right people doing the right things at the right time and respecting each person for their role in the organization? It's time for you to focus on the important things. I'm Lee Strickland, and this is Focus on Business. And until next time, stay focused on the important things.